Hello, this is Anjali Grantham, curator of collections and exhibits at the Baranoff Museum in Kodiak, and this is Way Back in Kodiak, a monthly exploration of Kodiak's history, museums, and culture. When you think of Kodiak bells, what comes to mind? Perhaps the Isle Bells, the handbell group that is known to flash mob the auditorium foyer or maybe the airport with their tranquil twinkles. Or maybe the ubiquitous bell hanging in each Kodiak bar. The one that, depending on if you're listening to the angel or the devil on your shoulder, you point out to tourists and tell them to either ring it or avoid it. Well, this episode we are speaking of neither the handbell group or the drinks for the house bell, but rather the bells that ring in the Russian Orthodox churches of Kodiak. The bells that ring from the Holy Resurrection Cathedral early in the morning on Sunday, or that ring throughout the day on Easter. The bells that announce a funeral or a special mass. The bells that ring to reflect each peal emitted from the Fisherman's Memorial each Memorial Day, commemorating those who have died at sea. But today we'll be discussing a few very special bells associated with the Russian Orthodox churches of Kodiak. And let me warn you, although the pitch of a bell rings quite clear, the story that follows does not. This is a story of mistaken identity and a historical mystery that has perplexed Kodiak people for over 80 years now. You see, in 1923, in an orange grove associated with Rancho Camulos in Southern California, Mrs. Alice Harriman uncovered a severely cracked bronze bell with the following inscription along the bottom.
1796 года, месяца января, лиц сей колокол на острове Кодиаке, благословением архимандрита Иосафа при правителе Александре Баранове.
In English it reads, in the year 1796, in the month of January, this bell was cast on the island of Kodiak by the blessing of Archimandrite Joseph during the sojourn of Alexander Baranov, followed by the initials M.V. Shah. Now, those are some notable names from a notable era in local history, where Father Yosef was one of the group of Russian Orthodox missionaries to come to Kodiak 2 years before the bell was cast. That is, in 1794. Father Herman was with him. Alexander Baranov, of course, was the head honcho in Russian America and the man who ordered a Russian settlement to be built at the present-day city of Kodiak. The bell with the inscription, then, we'll call the 1796 bell. And now, fast forward to 2013. A Russian Orthodox bell from Southern California was repatriated to Kodiak, a gift from the Catholic San Fernando Mission given to honor the connection between Catholic Native Americans and Russian Orthodox Native Americans. But this was a different bell, one that was confused with the 1796 bell. We will call this other bell the Orphanage Bell, since it once hung at an LA orphanage. Today, we will try to figure out the movements of these bells. We'll learn about the tradition of Orthodox bells, what the 1796 bell might have meant when it was cast in Kodiak, some theories as to how the bells made it to California, and the journey to Kodiak in 2013 of the Orphanage Bell. I know nothing of bell ringing, and my knowledge of the history of music is downright sorry, so I knew that I needed expert assistance. I made a call to San Francisco to enlist some help.
My name is Mark Galperin, and I'm a general manager of Expanding Edge LLC, doing business as Blagovest Bells. I am a Russian campanologist.
Campanology is the study of bells. And my first question to Mark was, why are Russian bells different from others? Everyone kept saying that this bell that was repatriated in 2013 was a Russian Orthodox bell. How did you know that beyond the appearance? Is there something that's fundamentally different among the bell ringing traditions of the world? Apparently there is.
So in the beginning, which means in the end of 10th century, when bell came to Russia, and then the bells in Russia had no differences comparing to their Western brothers. But what happened then, that in time of the Renaissance, I would say late Renaissance in Europe, it was a common demand for making bells a la piano, because it was time when of creation of classical music. In classical music, every key on the keyboard meant certain tone, certain pitch. And bells initially in Europe have not been tuned like Russian bells, still not tuned. And under pressure of Western classical music composers, bell makers start to develop methods of tuning the bells in the way that they would produce mainly a single tone. And the name of these bells are octave bells. Russian bells have not been influenced by classical composers, mostly because they have been a part of church service where classical music didn't find the way through.
So indeed, there's something very historic about the sound of a Russian bell. That is because it hasn't been influenced by classical music. It means that when you listen to a Russian bell, it's almost like listening to a bell that was cast 1,000 years ago, over 1,000 years ago, before this influence of Western music. But our bells were not cast 1,000 years ago. The 1796 bell was cast in, you got it, 1796, here in Kodiak. Mark has been researching the history of these Kodiak bells for many years now, and so he has spent significant time looking at old Russian documents to learn more about the person that created the bells and the situation under which they were created.
We have letters been written by Baranov, and also the letters of the widow of Shelikhov, Natalia Shelikhov, where they mentioned about casting in winter 95 and next year 96 of, as I said, copper bells for the church. And we know who cast them, specifically these famous bells, which has been made for Kodiak Church. And this founder was Vasily Shaposhnikov. We found mentioning of him, I believe, beginning from 1794.
So those are the initials within the inscription. Those are the founder, Vasily Shaposhnikov. The harmonious sound that Vasily Shaposhnikov's bell once emitted across St. Paul Harbor is a bit ironic, considering that the two other men mentioned on the bell, Father Joseph and Alexander Baranov, did not have a relationship that would be characterized as harmonious.
It's a very interesting and challenging history. I think a lot of times it's misunderstood.
First, an introduction.
Yes, my name is Archpriest Innocent Dresdo, and better known as Father Innocent. I'm the Dean of Holy Resurrection Cathedral in the Kodiak Island Deanery in the Diocese of Alaska. You know, Baranov's role was, you know, governmental, managerial, and, you know, Kodiak was very isolated. And when the accounts that we have from the missionaries, including Yosef, is that the missionaries were not exactly warmly received. There are a multitude of accounts of the tension that existed. St. Herman was always constantly, seeking out a church to be built. And how would that be built? Well, the missionaries had absolutely no money. They were monks. They came from Valam. They had nothing. They had just spent 9 months getting here, across land, across sea, never to return. And so they had nothing. They didn't. They lived as true monks. They didn't live to gain things in the world. But they were tasked with what originally was a mission to serve the Orthodox in the Russian in the Russian fur trade, the Russian American Company. But what they soon realized was that the native population was being essentially their gifts were being exploited. They were being essentially enslaved, and so they immediately began to do things to help defend what they saw as very unchristian behavior. So pretty good monks. That's what monks are supposed to do. They're not to be political. They're not to be fitting in with an economic picture. You know, they're to meet people's spiritual needs, and so of course that creates tension. You know, and it created tension. And the monies were provided, though, to build the church. The first church was built of logs. We have indications of that around 1796, so 2 years after the mission was established. But we also have accounts at that time of the missionaries practically starving. You know, they weren't given funds. Food was withheld. There was lots of tension. All of a sudden, their slave labor is being told, "No, you're actually made in the image and likeness of God. You're a person. You're not something that just should be subject to abuse."
Barona felt that the missionaries were to sanctify marriages and perform baptisms, not organize the Alutiiq and inform them of their rights as subjects of the Tsar. The missionaries wrote that at times they feared to leave their cabin as they were scared for their safety. We're also speaking of a time of severe scarcity. Years would pass between shipments of supplies and men from Russia. Food was really hard to come by. The fact that bells were made of what was certainly precious copper and tin shows that their creation was important. The fact that Baranov and Joseph show up together on the bell is both ironic and telling. Although Joseph and Baranov were typically at odds, Baranov was Orthodox, as were the rest of his rough-and-tumble employees. Bells were a critical component of the church. And perhaps more than that, bells were important for communication. The songs emitted specified certain events and specific church information. For example,
the faithful would know who was present, if the bishop was present, or what service was about to take place based on the way the bells were ringing and the time of day it was. And then for those who weren't able to be at church, maybe they were shut-ins or had various reasons why they couldn't attend, they could listen for key moments of the services because the bells would then ring at certain times. And so the faithful could actually pray at home, even though they couldn't be present at church, and know where everybody was in the service based on the bell ringing.
But they might have served another function. Ringing the bells raised an alarm. The sound traveled further than any other, except perhaps a cannon. As a result, they could call the faithful to worship or call the settlement to arms in case of attack. As a result, Baranov might have seen the bell as a double win, a way to honor his faith and an important tool for defense. Okay, now we know a bit more about who made the bell, what was happening in Kodiak at the time of its creation, and some of the reasons as to why it was cast. But then, silence. We don't hear of the bell again until 1923, when it's discovered at the Rancho Camulos in Southern California. From 1796 to 1923, at some point in those 127 years, the bell made its way from Kodiak to California. How and why? Was it perhaps that in 1806, Rezanov brought these bells with him to California in order to negotiate for food with the Spanish who were stationed there? Or perhaps the bells made their way to Fort Ross, the colony that was Russian in Northern California, and from there to the San Fernando Mission? There are as many theories as to how the bells made it to California as there are people guessing, really. And none of the theories have been particularly proven or disproven. Ooh, related tangentially is the fact that right now in Juneau, the state is building the brand new State Library, Archive, and Museum building. It was recently named the Father Andrew Kashaveroff Building in honor of the first curator of the institution. Well, Father Kashaveroff was from Kodiak, and he pondered the movements of this bell many years before now. So let's hear some of his theories as to how the bell might have made it to California.
December 8, 1931. Now for the question about how the bell got to Ventura. This is one of the things that has bothered me for so many years. During 2 or 3 years, I have searched all historical books and data on Russian bells in Alaska. I cannot say that I have the correct answer. I have searched every possible data in this matter, now at the Alaska Historical Library, which is very complete in all things pertaining to Alaska. There is no historical authenticity about Rezanov taking bells to California. In our library, we have the work of Klepnikov, who enumerates all the cargo on this ship, Juno. There are no bells mentioned. Fort Ross was established in 1812. There is no reason why Rezanov should carry bells to California at that time. According to Podkin's description of Fort Ross, 1856, the post was established in the year mentioned above. He says, though the settlement had no resident priest, they nevertheless had a church. From other historical sources, I find that Father Veneminov visited the settlement. Also, other priests attached to the various visiting ships conducted services at the chapel at Fort Ross. Having a church there, they must have had bells. As Kodiak was the principal supply station, most of the paraphernalia for the church was brought from there. Why could not a bell be sent down there from Kodiak? The post was entirely abandoned in 1842. In the subsequent 2 years, all the material from Ross was removed to Sitka. The rest of the property was sold to Mr. Sutter. Is it not possible that Mr. Sutter would take down the bells and give them to some individual in California? This is one guess, though I do not take it seriously. The other guess is, in 1882, the Kodiak Church sent down to California some old and cracked church bells to be recast. It is possible that one of the bells sent down there might have been the Kodiak bell.
Well, apparently Kashaverov isn't a big fan of the Rezanov theory. Mark Galperin as well agrees with Kashaverov. He thinks that it doesn't make sense for consecrated bells in Kodiak to be sent to California at this point. Moreover, Kashaverov doesn't seem to think that the Fort Ross hypothesis is very likely either. Kashaverov and Mark Galperin do agree, however, on the possibility of it being shipped from Kodiak in 1882.
The most reasonable suggestion is that the bell, when it was cracked, it has been put together with other bell, which required repair, and sent to San Francisco for repair or exchange for new bells. We know that in 1882, such shipment has been delivered to San Francisco from Alaska with bells, cracked bells, which required recasting. In Russian tradition, we don't repair the bells, we just recast the bells. And we use the metal, the bronze from the old bells, when casting new bells. So your new bell, in a way, is a hair of the old bell, but it's new, and it would work for another generation.
However, in this case, it's obvious that they didn't use the old bell to make the new bells, otherwise we still wouldn't have around the 1796 bell. What Mark believes happens is that instead of recasting it, a person picked it up, and somehow the bell made its way to the San Fernando Mission. Quiet surrounded the mystery of the bell's movements for many years following its discovery in California. But the mystery was rediscovered in the 1980s by Father Andrew Harrison. He's now at St. Luke Orthodox Christian Church in Illinois, but previously he served at a church in California.
I was the rector of a parish of St. Innocent in Tarzana, California, near the San Fernando Mission. And I went there one day just on a tour, because it's like a tourist place to go see. And that's where I came upon the bell. I got involved in it because in their official archives at the San Fernando Valley Mission, they state that the bell that they had the inscription on it. And it also mentions the crack in it. So when I got involved in it, I thought that the bell that they had was the one that the historical bell, the one with the inscription on it. And so I went through all the arrangements to try to get that bell brought up to Alaska for, I believe it was a 1,000-year celebration of Christianity in Russia. So I was trying to arrange it. I thought it would be a good gesture, because since it's a Roman Catholic mission, that they would that we could arrange to bring that bell up for that celebration, then return it to the San Fernando Mission. We couldn't get approval by the Catholic Church, or our own Orthodox bishops didn't seem that interested in it at the time. And there was a question that we couldn't find the inscription. I looked all over that bell, and it wasn't there. So the whole thing kind of just came to an end.
Or so he thought. Years later, he was contacted by a Jesuit priest, Father Bucco.
And he thought maybe we could get the bell, you know, not only loaned to the church in Alaska, but also returned. And he thought it could be done through the Native American, the Catholic Native Americans and the Orthodox Native Americans.
However, all along, this inscription stating that the bell had been cast in Kodiak in 1796 still had not been located on this bell. In the meantime, Father Innocent back in Kodiak was told of this bell.
Our then locum tenens bishop, Archbishop Benjamin, contacted me talking about a bell being repatriated or being brought back to Kodiak. And the cathedral itself is you know, a repository of a real rich living history of icons and bells. And so, naturally, we were very excited about it. And I started asking people in the community, you know, do you know anything about this bell? Well, nobody knew anything about this bell. So there was not any kind of even oral history that had been handed down about this particular bell.
Now back to Father Andrew Harrison.
But in the process of getting started, we found that, and I didn't know about it, there was a second bell. And the second bell was not at the San Fernando Valley Mission. It was at that Cumula Ranchero, the one with the inscription in it. The bell at the San Fernando Valley, which they thought was the historical bell, was not. The historical one with the date on it and Baranoff's name on it was at the Cumula Ranchero all the time.
So we have a case of mistaken identity. At some point, both the 1796 bell and the orphanage bell were at the San Fernando Mission. However, at some unknown time, the 1796 bell was brought to the Rancho Camulos. By that time, however, when this was all uncovered, the transfer of the orphanage bell was already in the works.
Father Bucco, Jesuit priest, suggested that we could get that bell back to Alaska if we had the Native Americans, Catholic Native Americans, give it to the Orthodox Native Americans. And so that orphanage bell was presented at a Catholic gathering of Catholic Native peoples. I think it took place in Texas, and our bishop was there when this bell was officially given to the Native Alaskans. Now, you want to see, it gets complicated. We figured that we'd never get the bell unless we had a copy made that we could offer to Catholics. So my parish here in Chicago had a copy made to be presented to the Catholics at this ceremony. But the copy is interesting, is not of the orphanage bell, but it's the one that's still at the Ranchero Cumulo. So a brand new bell was cast in Russia, an exact copy of the Cumulo Ranchero bell, with the thought that bell would be given to the Cumulo Ranchero if they would give us that other bell back. But right now, the one we made, which is a copy of the 1794 bell, is hanging at the San Fernando Mission.
So, a copy of the 1796 bell replaced the orphanage bell that was given to Kodiak. There is no proof that the orphanage bell has a Kodiak connection, but Father Andrew believes that the bells were a part of a set that were sent to California. Marlt Galperin concedes that it could be that the orphanage bell was used in Kodiak and shipped to San Francisco for repair with the 1796 bell. However, all agree that definitive proof is certainly lacking. Nonetheless, the orphanage bell has symbolic significance.
Well, there have been really ongoing talks between the Catholic Church and the Orthodox to bring about a unity. They've been separate for almost 1,000 years. And so there is an ongoing dialogue between Catholics and Orthodox to try and solve the differences so that the churches could be one again. And so that's kind of a nice gesture on the part of the Catholics to return that bell, kind of a friendly gesture, which is part of the spirit of this possible unity which could take place.
So in the spirit of unity, the bell arrived in Kodiak.
We very ceremoniously took my big yellow F-150 Ford pickup to the airport and received it directly from the plane. And we brought it right to the church and actually brought it right inside of the cathedral immediately. And we actually uncrated it within the church. It now resides in the entryway of All Saints of Alaska Chapel at St. Herman's Seminary, which is just a block away from the cathedral here in Kodiak. And it is displayed very beautifully. We took timber from the church in Afognak. If we brought back two very, very large hand-hewn timbers from the original church in Afognak, and these were beautiful examples of Russian craftsmanship. And most of those timbers were used in the building of the bell tower that now resides at the seminary. But we had enough left that we were able to make a very beautiful three-beam frame. And we cut it in mission style with the angled cuts to hang the bell from.
So next time you pass the All Saints of Alaska Chapel and the doors are open and a mass isn't underway, go ahead and pop your head in and see this orphanage bell. This Russian bell with a California story that, now that it's on Kodiak Island, has a local connection for sure. And when you hear the ringing of the bells from the Holy Resurrection Cathedral, remember that you are listening to a tone that is over 1,000 years old, that you are listening to an arrangement with a specific meaning. And for the last word, Father Innocent.
Bell ringing itself should invoke the sense of hearing that stirs the soul, in which you hear the bell and you know it's being rung for a reason. Whether we know that reason or not, at a bare minimum, for any of us, we don't have to be Orthodox for this to be, it should be a moment for us to stop and realize we did not ask to be born into this world. That was something beyond our control. There's something bigger than us. Our world is not just about me. It's not just about, you know, what I see and observe or what I can tangibly prove scientifically. And the ringing of a bell and those vibrations, that sound waves as they go through the air and they hit our eardrums and our brain processes and our brain says it's a bell, but our soul stirs. There's something deeper there.
Special thanks for this episode of Way Back in Kodiak go to Father Andrew Harrison, Father Innocent Dresdo, Mark Galperin, Jake Everich, and all of those who over the years have researched and recorded the history of Kodiak's bells and those who have cared for them. This show couldn't happen without the support of Kodiak Public Broadcasting or the Baranoff Museum, so remember to support local radio and local history by making a donation to these great Kodiak organizations. Thanks for listening. This is Anjali Grantham saying bye for now.